feel the life force flowing to your medulla, that's at the base of the skull, and then flowing throughout your entire body. I was able to keep myself awake for weeks, or not weeks, but days at a time. Master used to do weeks at a time. Days at a time when necessary. And he found that the body is like a battery. And if you let a battery run down, you're always using it, never recharging it. Of course, it runs out of juice eventually. And the body is the same way. And what's known to the yogis in India is that life force comes in through the medulla there at the lower base of the skull. And it's shaped like a little tiny upside-down pyramid. And through there, the life force comes into the body through the astral spine, down through your spine and out through your whole body system. And through this way, yogis were able, in recorded times, to be able to be buried for weeks at a time without any oxygen, without any food or water. And when they were revived, they were fine and they got up and they walked out. And it's because they had learned how to master this life force that is in their body. And that Jesus, at one time, all the other disciples went into town and were begging for food. And when they came back out, Jesus said, "I eat of a bread that you know not of." And this is the life force. He had also mastered this life force and was able to live by this life force that came in through the body in this way. So Master found that by charging the body through this tension and relaxation exercise, not only is it good for the muscles and for stimulation of blood flow, but also you can stimulate life force flow in this way. And so it's a powerful technique, and if you'll learn to use it, instead of grabbing for a coffee or a Coca-Cola in the afternoon or other old times of the day, you sit down and you just go through, or you can stand up as well, and you can go through the 20 body parts, recharge your body. You can do it two or three times in a row if you're very tired. And you can recharge your body and get your aura, your electrical body glowing and be ready to get going and keep going. Works much better than other stimulants. In India, perhaps more than any other country in the world, there is a science of religion. Now today, in Western world, science and religion seem to be opposed to each other somewhat, and this dates back to Galileo's day and other times when the Orthodox Church of the day resisted scientific development. But in India, science and religion have always gone together because the consciousness and the body of individuals are seen as the laboratory for truth. And that you don't just accept something because you've been told it, but you are given a theory and you are given some practices. And through the theory and through the practices and learning how to focus your mind, you are able to prove for yourself what the truth is within those theories that have been proposed. And so this is a vast difference between oftentimes what is practiced in the West, where you take something as a matter of faith and you are saved by that faith. But if that were the truth, if you are saved from sin by just having faith, then anyone who proclaimed that faith would no longer have any error, since sin means error, it means missing the mark, as an archer would miss his target. But we see that that's not true. People proclaim their faith and then they go on and they have difficult times. Of course, this happens in all religions, including in India, where people fall short of the mark. But it doesn't negate the idea that there is an attainable goal. It may not be attained by everybody, but anybody who applies themselves in a serious kind of way towards attaining higher consciousness may do it through the techniques that are given. And so everything that is taught to you and everything that is said is given as a way of instruction for how to apply what it is that you are being given. It's not just a theory, it's not just something to take as an article of belief, but it's to apply it and prove it for yourself. And this is the thing, one of the great things that attracted me to this path was that it wasn't something about learning a new language or learning scriptures or memorizing things. It was how to apply truth and to realize the fullness of that truth within. And so the beginning of that comes from one of the teachings. Master wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is the central scriptures within India, and it's a conversation between Krishna, but that represents the Christ or the Kutastha Chaitanya. It's the place here at the third eye point. And Jesus said, "Behold, I stand at the door and I will knock. Any who will open the door, I will come in and sup with them and they with me." There's an inner communion that happens when that door is opened, and that door resides here, right within your own body, here at the asana. And so it's through these techniques of focusing the mind here at the asana that this is awakened. And this is the inner path. This is the inner path. So Krishna represents that. Arjuna represents the third chakra. The third chakra is down here, just below the belly button, back at the base of the spine, back in the spine. So if you were to go about 1 inch down below your belly button and then directly back to your spine, that's where you would find the third chakra. The third chakra has to do with will. And with individual will is surrendered and united to the Kutastha Chaitanya, this place here at the ajna, then there is will, divine will becomes individual will. There becomes an alignment, an attunement between the two. Now, most of us guide our wills by our own intelligence, by what we think is right and wrong, what we hope will get us what we want to get along the way. But when we unite the individual will with God's will, there is a higher intelligence and a higher power that begins to take us over. And so this is a dialogue between individual self, individual will, and supreme will, the will of God within us. And that's what Krishna represents, and Arjuna down here at the third chakra. So this is Krishna speaking to Arjuna from chapter 8, beginning with verse 22. "The Supreme Spirit, transcendent and existing in the body, is the detached beholder. The Supreme Spirit, transcendent and existing in the body, is the detached beholder. The consenter, the sustainer, the experiencer, the great Lord, and also the highest self." Master continues with his commentary. The word para in this verse, in Purusha Para. Now, Purusha is the light seen here at the ajna. This is the Christ consciousness within you. And Para indicates different from. Though the Supreme Being, Purusha, or the light within you, manifests itself in and as Prakriti. Prakriti is cosmic nature. And the human body, or the little Prakriti, it remains simultaneously transcendent, that is, the Purusha, the light within you, beyond or different from its manifestation. So, when you have the divine light within you, and we all do, we can't kill it, we can't destroy it, we couldn't if we wanted to, it's there. And no matter how much people go against the law of light, the law of God, no matter how much they desecrate themselves or other people, they cannot destroy that fundamental, that most fundamental light within them. And so it's absolutely essential to our life that this light exists within us. But most people are ignorant of it. And that's the great problem here. But it always exists, and it's separate from all the delusion, any form, anything that separates us from that divine light is always preserved. Krishna at one point says, it's like the enameled leaf that a that sits on the lotus with the lotus in the water, and a drop of water goes on that enamel leaf. The drop of water rises above the leaf. It doesn't penetrate into it and eventually evaporates or rolls off that leaf. In the same way, the true self, anything that we do in the way of ignorance, anything that we do in the way of against that, just rolls right off like that droplet of water does. It's kind of nice to know, isn't it? That no matter what we do, we can't destroy it. We can't change it. No matter how bad we are, no matter what we do against other people, that original purity, that original innocence that was with us from the very beginning is always intact, is always there. Now, realizing it is where we pay the price, so to speak, for going against it, because we have to face everything that we've done in terms of going against that light. In a dream, a man can create for himself a new body. He can support it with his individuality and permit it to work, achieve, and experience human sensations and thoughts. As the Lord and Master of his dreams, he witnesses all the operations of his new dream body. Now, as you rise up in consciousness, you become more and more a master of your dreams. In the beginning, you may wake up in your dream, or in other words, you begin to become aware that you're a dreamer during the dream. And as you purify the mind and the consciousness, this becomes more and more a matter of fact, to the point where you don't feel there's any difference between your waking state and your dreaming state. Subtler even more than that is the deep dream state. And this is identical with the supreme state of samadhi, or absorption in the divine, only we're doing it is in an unconscious way. So everybody becomes unconscious yogis at nighttime when they go to sleep, or in the daytime when they go to sleep. And so you drop into that deeper state of sleep. Then you remain there for some time, and this is when you really get rested. Then you come into a dream state of sleep, and you begin to actively go about what has gone on within your day, within your life, and you dream about those things, and it's a way for the brain to process and integrate those things that have happened to you in your lifetime. And then you perhaps drop back into another deep state of sleep again, and then you go through another dream state. And you go back and forth like this throughout the day. Each stage of dreaming and sleeping and deep sleep like that is about 90 minutes each. And we go through the night like that. We're actually becoming unconscious yogis in this way. And to reverse that process is through meditation. And when you meditate, at first you have daydreams, things come up into your mind, you're thinking about other things, and your mind goes sailing off one direction or another. You're a daytime dreamer. Gradually, if you go deeper, you become absorbed in the samadhi state. Samadhi is absorbed in the bliss and the peace and the joy of God. I've had some people come to me and say, well, I've been in samadhi state. And I say, oh, what is your experience like? Well, I just go into a state of nothingness. I kind of zone out a bit. And I said, that's not samadhi. That's an unconscious state. That's actually the opposite direction that you want to go into. I see some people, and they've said that they've been in samadhi. Their chins are dropped down like this, and they're breathing heavy. They're not in a samadhi state, they're in a sleep state. They can be a conscious sleeper, but nevertheless, they're in a sleep state. Papa said there's a man that was at the ashram one time who claimed he was in samadhi. But as soon as the dinner bell rang, he got up and he left with everybody else to go to lunch. Papa said, no way is that samadhi. When you're in samadhi, you're completely absorbed in this. You become so absorbed that all sense of hearing, all sense of sight, all sense of smell of the outer things disappear from you, and you're completely absorbed in that inner divine communion. And so just hearing the dinner bell and going off and going to dinner with everybody else would not be a samadhi state, not unless you had attained the highest sahaja samadhi, in which case you're always in that samadhi state. And you can be conscious, completely conscious in this world, and go about doing ordinary things. These are things not to be minimalized, not to be marginalized, not to be taken lightly. We are given very refined descriptions about what these different states are for us so that we can attain to them. In the same way, the Supreme Divine Dreamer, God or Purusha, employs his dream consciousness to create and support his cosmic body of nature. So in the same way that you, have you ever thought about when you dream? How do you do that? You create an entire world. You create an entire body. Sometimes you're a different personality. Sometimes you can be a different sex. It all happens within your dream state. How does that happen? Well, in the same way, God is creating this vast creation all around us. And he says, isn't it wonderful? Go out and enjoy it. We don't all the time enjoy it, don't we? So, in the same way that God dreams his dream, we are also dreaming our dream. His dream consciousness to create and support his cosmic body of nature, or prakriti, and transcendentally experiences its activities as the great Kutascha, the Lord of creation, and as the infinite spirit beyond creation. Similarly, in a miniature way, God beyond creation and in creation as the soul in man lends his superconsciousness to permit the activities of the human body to be carried on. As the almighty Lord of the senses and as the divine self in the human body, he upholds and transcendentally observes all the dream experiences of man. It is from here at the Ajna, when you become deeply absorbed there at the Ajna, you then perceive everything that goes on in your body. In fact, your life force comes in at the medulla, comes across here to the Ajna, and then is radiated or reflected down through your body as life energy. It's what gives you the power to be able to have sense, your sensory experiences, your sense of mind, your sense of self as an ego. Everything that you experience as yourself comes from this spot here. And that is why we're taught to focus our attention here at the Ajna, because it's here we draw all the life force up through the spine and reverse this process of shining down into the body and drop back up to the body to the Ajna here once again. When we get established there, we are established in this Christ or this Krishna consciousness, this Kutastha Chaitanya. And it is from here that we observe the whole play going on within ourselves. We see the mind and its operation, but we stand apart and we see it as something different than the mind. We see the life force going down through all the different senses, through sight, through hearing, through touch, smell, and hearing, and we're able to perceive everything that we get in through the senses. And we're able to do that because of this light that comes from here at the Purusha. You see, this provides the intelligence, the awareness, everything that we are comes from here. Mother used to say that the life force comes in at the medulla, comes across to the optic thalamus, to the Ajna here, and provides the light by which these two eyes see. Now that runs contrary to how we usually think of vision, don't we? We're told by physical scientists that from the sunlight or from some other light source, light bounces around, it comes into the retina, the images are then reversed, turned upside down, taken to the brain then turns it right side back up again, and it interprets the images that we see through the light. But to think of that the light comes through the medulla and provides the light by which these two eyes see, it provides the life force that comes as light to these eyes. Take a dead person, stop food into his mouth, try to force him to breathe, anything at all, nothing works. Why? Because the life force is reversed. It's gone out of the body. The soul has left the body. There's nothing to reinvigorate that body with life force any longer. So even though it can have all the same physical form as a living person, it's no longer available. It's no longer alive. The soul has fled. The life force has fled. It's gone. And this is a really profound state. When I first saw a dead person, it was my grandfather. And people were going, oh, it looks like, because they were presenting the body in the casket, and people were going, looks like he's just like he's asleep on the couch. You've maybe heard people say that at viewings and at funerals and things like that. And I looked at him and I thought, he doesn't look like he's sleeping. There's something gone. It may sound self-evident, but there's something missing very definitely. He was gone as a soul. His life force was gone. It was an empty shell that I was looking at. It looked all right in a physical sense, but it was an empty shell. And it was so clear and apparent to me that this was a significant difference. It wasn't a small thing that had happened. And so when that life force evacuates out of the body, it's gone. It's no longer there. Now, we grieve over this kind of thing, but really, if we knew the truth, we would know that the soul simply leaves the body at that time, and it rises up, and it escapes from this world of physicality. It goes into a much brighter world. I was in a deep state of meditation one time when I remembered a previous lifetime where I had left the body. And it was at the last moment. And as I left that body, there was such a feeling of freedom as I rose up above the body. And I enjoyed it, but I looked back on my life then and I was able to see everything that I did. But I did it with the help of the Supreme Soul or Spirit within me. And so the things that I had done wrong that I had not really acknowledged in my lifetime, that particular lifetime, stood out clearly to me. I was being taught the difference between right and wrong. I was being taught about what it is to rise up into this Purusha, because this divine being, or what seemed to me to be a divine being sitting with me as I reviewed my life, was my own Supreme Soul. It was that God within me that has always existed. But I wasn't aware of it. And as I looked, and I remembered, as I looked at this beautiful light and the intelligence that was manifesting through this beautiful light, I remembered thinking to myself, I want to be like this person. I want to be like him. Without completely realizing at the time, that was me in the true sense of the spirit and as God within me. Only I was so separated from God at the time, I didn't recognize that this was my own soul, that this was my own spirit that was helping, guiding me, look back over my life, helping to educate me, to show me the difference between right and wrong, between higher thought and lower thought. But that feeling of being with this soul, with this wonderful spirit that was with me showing this, really stuck with me. And what I really wanted to be like was like that. Like that. And it was a turning point in my evolutionary course. Before that time, I had been focused on the things of the outside. I had not been a particularly kind or good person. I had been a vicious warrior through that lifetime. And I deeply regretted the kind of life that I had lived and many of the decisions. It wasn't all bad, but it was enough that I felt very badly about the things that I'd done. And I wanted to change my life from that point on. I wanted to change the course of my existence. I wanted to become like that, that being that was sitting next to me during that time. And so if we know the truth about what we call death, we would not mourn so much for the individual who has passed. They've continued on. They've moved on to greener pastures, so to speak. And really, what we're mourning for oftentimes is ourselves, because we're stuck back here. And we realize that this individual has gone on. And so we should not, we're going to, of course, naturally miss a person who has left the body. We won't have the same kind of relationship that we had with them when they're in a physical body. Nevertheless, it's something that we can actually be joyful for. And Sri Yukteswar said that in the higher astral realms, when somebody in effect is going to die, only they consciously leave the body, they have a celebration. They have a party. And there are lots of people who come and they congratulate them. It's considered a graduation. This person is moving on now. that's a different thought, isn't it? If we could take that in, and as people learn how to consciously die, we don't need to be caught up in fighting death in the way that we have. When the moment comes and we know it as a soul, we can surrender to it. We can let go of our attachment to this body. Advanced yogis learn that there's a certain nerve. It's an astral nerve right in the center of the brain. And when you're ready to leave this body, they can consciously go in and they can break that nerve. And when that nerve is broken, the soul escapes out from the body and doesn't return once again. So that there are souls like Swami Pranabhananda, who is a highly realized soul, a completely realized soul. And when he was ready to leave the body, he gathered all these people together. He fed everybody. He fed everybody. And he wanted everybody to have a nice meal. And everybody is around and they listen to him give a spiritual talk. And then at the end, he told his disciple, Sananda, he says, "I'm going to kick the frame." And his disciple didn't exactly know what he meant by that. And suddenly his guru turned up. He turned around three times to the right. And then he sat back down and he left the body. And his disciple realized, no, don't go. He didn't want him to go. And he left the body and he's consciously gone. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we all got to the point where we could make that decision, we knew that it's time to go, and we leave the body. Master left in such a beautiful way. He was giving a talk in front of a large group. It was the ambassador from India, and that meant so much to him because during his childhood and growing up, India was working for its independence from England. And here was the ambassador, you know, India had become a nation, and here was the ambassador who had come to honor Yogananda. And so Yogananda was giving a talk, and he quoted from a poem of his about how his life had been touched and hallowed by having been born in India and had the blessings of India and everything that went on. And Master would oftentimes say that when I go, I want to go with my boots on and speaking about India. And here he was quoting the very end of this poem. And he looked to his right. Perhaps he was thinking of turning around three times, even as Pranabhananda did. But he didn't make it that far. He just turned to his right, and he dropped the form right there. And he was gone. And he had consciously left the body. It's called Maha Samadhi. Maha means great, means beyond. And it's the beyond Samadhi, the great Samadhi. It's the Samadhi of death. And it's not a time to mourn. It's a time to feel the greatness and the blessings of that spiritual master. Mother went down after he had left the body, and because they were waiting for a group to come from India, I think that it was over 20 days that they kept the body. And Mother went down and he was kept at Mount Washington. The body was laid out on his bed there. And Mother spent the entire night meditating with the master. He was gone from the body in that sense. And at the end of that night, the sun was coming up, and she prayed with great depth in her soul that she wanted anything that she could do for his work. She totally surrendered herself to him. And at that point, she knelt down, and she touched her forehead to his feet. And when she did so, out of this so-called dead body, an electric shock went up through her ajna and went throughout her whole being. It's from a man who's supposed to be dead. Makes you wonder, huh? And that was a very significant time and experience for Mother. So these things are true. These things are true. And if we could get more on friendly terms with what we call death, one meditation that I've talked about before, and I think it's a wonderful meditation that God gave me, but if you can picture yourself, whenever that moment may come in the future, when you're ready to leave the body, and you're taking those last breaths, and instead of having fear, instead of having any kind of apprehension about what's going on, or being overly mindful of the people who may be around you, when you take that last breath, instead of, the most natural thing in the world is to reach for the next breath, isn't it? But instead, when you take that breath out, with it you expand your spirit out. It comes through, you break that nerve in the center of the head, and your spirit goes out with that last breath. You release yourself and you commend yourself to your Heavenly Father. You go out through the ajna, your eyes. Have you ever noticed how most people, when they die, their eyes roll up here to look at the ajna? They're meditating, aren't they? And it's because that's their unconsciously leaving the body through the ajna here, in the same way that yogis consciously leave their body in this way. So if you think about that last breath, and as you let it out, you let your spirit out and you expand it out into and embrace all infinity. All infinity. You don't go anywhere in that sense because you merge yourself in the all consciousness. As one of the disciples said to Ramana Maharshi, they said, "What will we do when you're gone?" And he says, "When I'm gone," he says, "where am I to go?" Because he is already identified with all pervasive consciousness. Where would he not be? Master wrote a poem about being gone when he had left the body, and that we would sense him in the grass and the trees and coming through the smell of the flowers, through the breeze, that he would come to us in all these different ways because he would be identified with the all-pervasive Christ consciousness or divine consciousness that is in throughout all creation. So when you think about leaving your family behind, leaving people who are beloved behind, how can you leave anybody behind when you're identified with that divine consciousness, that all-pervasive consciousness? You're a part and parcel of everything that is. Who are you leaving behind? Where are you going? That you're going to be someplace separate from anyone else. And in particularly, this is true for a realized master, because when they leave the body, they go out and they merge into the all-consciousness because they have that capacity. They don't travel on necessarily as a particularized soul. They can become absorbed in the complete and total freedom of divine consciousness. What that is exactly, we can't even hardly imagine from the human mind. What we can know is that its beauty, its splendor, its light, its love, its everythingness is more than we can possibly imagine. And it's all the beauty, all the wonder, all the intelligence that we can know about in this life, multiplied by many hundreds and millions of times, because it is part and parcel of the cosmic consciousness of what God is. So this is the thing that we have to realize, is that we have that inside of us. This is the great message. This is the good news of the gospel. You are that. You are that. And you have a million sources here in the world telling you you are not that. You are not that. You are something less than that. And don't you dare think that you could be that. But then isn't that exactly what they were telling Jesus? He said, "I and my Father are one. We want to kill you," was the response. How dare you say something like that? Well, wouldn't there be people in the world that would want to kill you if you were to say that today? No, that's only one man 2,000 years ago. But the message is the same. Because to all them who believed on him, gave he power to become the sons of God, to rise up into that divine consciousness. Yet it's the message then, or it's the message when Krishna, at 3,500 years before that time, was teaching the same thing. You see, the message has not changed. But we have to make the effort. We have to be willing to give ourselves totally and completely. The Kutasya Chaitanya is right here at the ajna. It is the Christ intelligence right within you. It is the light of your own being. That is the Purusha. That informs you. It gives you life. It gives you an ability to think and to breathe and to have your being. Everything that you are. And by focusing your attention here and learning to deeply meditate here, you can become absorbed in that light, absorbed in that intelligence, and become one with that. And so let us not get too sidetracked with the things of life. It's very easy. It's very easy. We have our default patterns. And if we're not constantly vigilant, we fall back into the old patterns again. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. We have to continue to make progress. We have to continue to look forward, to look to awaken ourselves. And if we don't do that, then what we will experience will be a lot of the same old stuff that we started with in life. And then, and how many lifetimes does this happen? We've awakened from a life, what we call death, and we awaken to a greater life, and we realize how much we wasted of this life. How much we didn't realize, how much we didn't strive, how much we got sidetracked. Think of how many New Year's resolutions go on year after year after year. Oh, I need to do that this year, we say at the New Year's, at the New Year's. And we said the same thing the previous 10 New Year's. And how many lifetimes do we go through and thinking, well, I go in with the best of intentions, but somehow I get sidetracked through the time. Somehow I lose my intention. So we have to strive because our default is to go back to the ego without striving. So we have to strive. We have to make effort. And we have to push ourselves a little bit to get out of that lethargy, to get out of that old pattern of the mind, and to grow into something new and wonderful. It's like the mother who was trying to pick out her clothes, and she was trying on one thing and another, and her three-year-old daughter was there. And finally the mother looked at the daughter and she says, well, what do you think I should change into? And the daughter thought for a little bit and she said, how about a butterfly? And you all have that butterfly of the soul within you. You all have that butterfly, beautiful, freedom-loving, expansive. It all lives within you. Sometimes it draws into the background and you don't think of it. You don't realize it. You get caught up in the things of the world. But it's there. It's there. If you could but realize it, grab hold of it, and never let go of it.